The landscape of healthcare is changing. Orientate yourself around a great client experience and your business will benefit as a result.
Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Savvy Dentist Podcast, the show where great dentistry meets great business. I'm Dr. Jesse Green, your host, and today we're having a conversation with Daniel Gibbs from clinicmastery.com. Daniel is a podiatrist by profession, and what he's uncovered is very similar to what we've uncovered in the dental field as well, and that is that the environment in which we're practicing is changing rapidly. Daniel is the winner of the Telstra Small Business Award, and he won that award off the back of creating a wonderful experience for his patients, so much so that he became known for it, so much so that he attracted new business off the back of it. And what Daniel shares in this particular conversation is how he went about systematically creating a patient experience that truly rocks. And he's got some really wonderful insights and some great questions that he had to ask himself and his team in order to bring that to life. He unpacks his four-step process for doing that, and the acronym for that, ironically, is STEP. So he's going to unpack that for us in this particular conversation. And what he shares is some practical steps, you know, A, B, and C, you know, think about this, think about that. And definitely some things that I would encourage everyone to be taking notes on, because all of us know that the patient experience is so much more than the clinical procedure that we provide. And yet we sweat over the clinical procedure, as we ought, but we sometimes forget that there's a person on the end of the procedure. So what Daniel does in this conversation is reminds us of that, and he reminds us how to look after the patient, not just the procedure. It's a wide-ranging, extensive interview, and Daniel shares some absolute nuggets of gold that I guarantee you will be able to apply immediately in your practice. And what's more, he's going to give you further things to think about so that you can really customize the information and make it relevant and pertinent to you and your practice. So have a pen and paper handy as always, take some great notes, take action, and without any further ado, here's Daniel Gibbs. Daniel Gibbs from Clinic Mastery, welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast. Thanks so much for coming on the show. How are you, mate?
Hey, Jesse, thanks for having me. Yeah, really glad to be here today.
Mate, not as glad as I am. I'm really pumped. I've been looking forward to this chat for a little while. I've been following your stuff online and seeing you win these awards. So I'm really keen and pumped to kind of, you know, put you on the couch, so to speak, and unpack what's in your head and see what we can pull out. It's going to be exciting and awesome.
Fantastic. Looking forward to it.
Cool. Listen, mate, just for the audience who, you know, dental audiences may not be aware of what you do, but I certainly am because I've been following your stuff for a while, as I said. And you've got a background in podiatry, but you won the Telstra Business Award. So firstly, congratulations on the award. And I'm just curious to ask, what was it that allowed your practice to be nominated and then win the award itself?
I think right from the very beginning, when I opened the practice, I kind of set it up to just, I wanted this to be the best, right? So I did everything I could to make this practice really good. I kept pushing against these brick walls because I thought it didn't matter how much I thought we had great technical ability or how much the furniture cost or the decor. It was more about the experience that the client had with us that ended up being the key. And the first thing that happened for us was when we served our first cup of tea. It was a herbal tea. We presented it to a client. And in the lead up to serving this tea, I'd had a chat with the tea distributor. And they said to me, gee, Daniel, if you're willing to serve this tea, you must be a really good podiatrist. And I thought, what a connection to make between the experience of serving some herbal tea and the fact that that would represent us being technically gifted at the same time. And it kind of led us down a line of, you know, what are other little things that we can do to actually show that we really care with our clients? I mean, as health professionals, we all really care about people, but it's demonstrating that care that goes beyond, you know, just helping someone get better, but doing it in the best possible way. And so, yeah, I guess what it was just, you know, it was the mineral salt foot bars. It was the fact that we would greet someone within 20 seconds of them arriving. It was making sure that we were acknowledging people, you know, with their cases and their stories. And we redefined our waiting room to the welcome room. And this whole experience that the client would have with us is how we kind of orientated everything. And it's funny, Jesse, when it came to deciding that we were going to give each client that came to see us an experience that was out of this world, we had to have systems in place in order to be able to deliver those experiences consistently. And if we were delivering those experiences consistently, we needed a team aligned with a culture that was all about creating those great experiences for our clients. And when we had great experiences, good systems and a good team, the business actually did pretty well at the same time. And we were very grateful as a very small practice in little old Adelaide in South Australia to be acknowledged with the award. And it's not really a space that health is represented very much. But I think far be it from our technical offering, which we believe is quite good as podiatrists, it was more about the experience that the clients came to us, and that's why that happened.
So isn't that a really amazing thing? There's so many things I'd like to pick up just to run with already, and we'll obviously dive into some of these in a bit more detail. But one of the things that I'm really interested about, and this is something that we've noticed in our practice and something we talk about as well, is that patients will use the things that they can observe as a proxy for the quality of care. So in your case, the quality of the tea that you're serving has served as a proxy for the, you know, for the clinical care, which they're probably not really well equipped to assess. And certainly in dentistry, no one can see inside their own mouth. So they can't assess it, but they look at the things they can assess and go, wow, they've got this tea thing nailed, therefore they must be good at the feet thing.
Exactly.
Isn't that amazing? It's quite remarkable when you think about it.
Yeah, so people will often match their experience that they have with something that they know. So the story that I reflected on when I was thinking about all of this for our clinic was the electrician who left a mess. And, you know, you may not understand how the house is wired or how, you know, they may have done the best runs, they may have done really good connections, they may have done great electrical work, but they left a mess. And you're less likely to actually call that electrician back because what you understand is mess. You don't understand the actual electrical work. And it's the same sort of thing with the health that we deliver. People understand a smile. They understand connection. They understand when you're genuinely interested in their concern. They don't understand. They just trust that you've got the technical knowledge to back that up. Whenever someone has a bad experience with a doctor or a health professional, often it's simply a case of, I didn't get along with them, rather than, I don't think they've got the technical skills to actually fix me.
Yeah, it's so true, isn't it? There's this thing, you know, people like to do business with who they know, like, and trust. And, you know, the thing that comes across in that is that trust is something that is assessed through other mediums other than the clinical care. And I think that's really gold.
And you know what's interesting here, Jesse, just to pause on that for a sec, because it's funny in my mind too, because it sounds like all this extra work to create that experience for the clients, but it actually isn't. The reason we serve a herbal tea, I mean, we've got a kettle, it's just a normal Breville kettle, and it heats the water up to the temperature that's required for the tea. We pour that water into a cup, which is, you know, it's a clear crystal cup, which looks lovely, but it's got a pyramid silken tea bag inside, so it looks lovely. But all we do is we pour that warm water into that cup and it's done. And so it's actually not very difficult. We put that on a lovely wooden oval tray. We have a little tea timer that we turn to make sure that when it's time, they take the tea bag out because we want to make sure that the tea is at the right flavor for them. But the point is, it's actually not that difficult to do something like that. The biggest difficulty we had was actually getting someone to accept it when we offered it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because they'd come in and we'd say, oh, this is our tea. That we tried so many different things. We thought this is our tea of the day. You know, it was cherry marzipan tea or something like that. And then people would be like, oh, you know, I'll be right. We tried the whole, how do you have it? And that never worked because everyone's got their preference for how they like their tea. And if you don't quite meet that preference, then you're worse off. But if you create an experience that's outside of what they normally would know, then that's where it happened. And what we ended up doing, Jesse, was we implemented a new system, which was when a new client came into our practice, we would actually sit down next to them and go through essentially the rules of the practice. And one of those being, hey, we're going to offer you a cup of tea and we actually expect you to say yes. It's just something that we want you to have. So when you come in and we offer it, please don't be afraid to say yes. And as a result of that little system, it then created more engagement because then we also started talking about, you know, the late notice fee. We started talking about, you know, parking and just the simple things about the practicalities of the appointment and just making sure that they book their next appointment, they actually show up. And so out of this simple cup of tea came so many other little systems that really, really helped. I don't want to hijack the conversation, but I just thought...
No, that's not hijacking at all. That's adding massive value. I love that. That's fantastic. So the tea is the segue into other things. And the fact that you've been able to use
that to you to discuss things, which, yeah, to be honest with you, Daniel, sometimes the conversation at the late notice fee, for example, can be, I don't know, it's not always the easiest conversation, but if you've broken the ice, so to speak, with a cup of tea and you've got that relationship, you've already formed that little bit of connection, you're talking about the rules of the practice, I think that's great. Yeah, it's setting the expectations early, and it's also, it's not just, you know, what they need to do, it's what they can expect from you as providers of care. And so it's a two-way street, and I think that's wonderful and lovely. I think it's an excellent idea. I love it.
Yeah, well, we think of it as the emotional bank account. You're constantly, when you meet someone, you're constantly trying to put deposits into that bank account, that figurative sort of emotional bank account. And every now and then you'll need to make a withdrawal, like if you're running behind schedule with one of your other clients. But if you're in enough positive territory and if you've got enough credit in the bank account, then it's okay. You can make those sorts of withdrawals. With the late notice fee, as you mentioned, it's hard to talk about that, especially. But I just feel like you don't even have to charge the late notice fee. If you talk about it and make people aware of it, then that's usually all that's required, as long as you've explained that. And clients love having boundaries. They love to know that they're fitting within, you know, a framework. And if you don't set the rules, then they will. And often their rules will be a lot different to yours. And if you want a clinic that's automated, that's running well, that's creating those great experiences, you've got to make sure that you set that expectation.
I think that's fantastic. I was when I wrote a book a while ago about patient retention, I was talking to my editor and I had this phrase in the book, which she objected really strongly to. And we had to refine it. But in essence, it was the fact that either you train your patients or they train you. But one way or another, someone's training someone.
Yeah.
And I think there's some truth in that. I think, you know, what you're doing with your expectations is just saying, look, this is how we roll. You know, at our practice, this is the way we do business. And, you know, we need you to kind of fit in with that. It's all done very nicely and very gently with a cup of tea. And it's lovely. But in essence, but that's a serious message, you know, along a cup of tea line. I think it's wonderful.
We take our job seriously. We are health professionals and we believe that we have the ability to provide great solutions for our clients, but we actually need our clients to be there in order to provide those solutions.
Yes, indeed.
So we need to make sure at every point of their journey with us that we've identified every touch point that we have with the client from before the appointment. So what happens from when they make the phone call and book that first appointment, between the time that they make that appointment and actually turn up, you know, what information do they get? What contact do they have beforehand? What expectations do they have? Then when they actually arrive in the clinic, what systems do we put in place to make sure that they have a great experience with us? To the actual consult itself, to make sure that everything has been addressed and has been covered, to then the formulation of the management plan so that they're very well aware of the next appointment and what exactly is supposed to happen. And then the follow-up after the appointment and nurturing that client to make sure that they achieve that success from problem to solution and more, that re-engagement later on down the track. So it's just simply a case of identifying all those touch points with the clients on their journey with us to make sure that we can, as health professionals, provide the best experience we can for them and great outcomes.
I think that's fantastic, mate. And a couple of things I just want to plumb into there as well, because you mentioned in the beginning that, you know, you'd identify these touch points, you've identified, you know, what it is that you want your patients to experience at each one of these touch points, whether it's what they're thinking, what they're feeling, or even understanding or knowing. But you said you needed to have great systems and teams aligned with a great culture. So I wanted to just kind of plumb into the systems and the team and culture part just for a second, because, you know, one of the things that we hear a lot about is, you know, systems, you know, whether you're reading E-Myth or, you know, Stephen Covey's books or any of those, you know, great business books, everyone talks about the need for systems. Yet sometimes when it comes to systems, if we're so rigid, we end up with like this McDonald's kind of experience where it's so regimented, you know, you've got the arms and legs of people, but not the hearts and minds. How do you create systems in your practice that give that structure but allow some flexibility, that allow that humanistic, you know, interaction?
Great question. And this was, in fact, this was the basis for my entire journey, where now I'm no longer on the tools, but I'm the owner of the business. And I found a point where I was, we were doing great, right? We had a great clinic and I thought we were doing really great when I was booked up, you know, 4 months in advance, 6 months in advance. I was seeing people up until midnight at night sometimes. But I had an associate in the office next to me and he was sitting there twiddling his thumbs with no one in his diary. And sometimes I would say to my clients, look, I really need you to see this other person just because I simply can't fit you into my diary. So just see them for a couple of visits, then come back and see me afterwards and we'll look at your progress. And they would go and see this person and then they'd come back to me and they'd say, look, Daniel, it was wonderful, but it just wasn't the same. And I want to keep seeing you, if that's okay. And this happened over and over again. And I kind of thought, what is going on? You know, I'm here in the room next. We have team meetings and stuff, but there was something that was missing. And what that was my connection with my team and actually helping my team member, my associate in the room next door, to actually talk the same way I do, to approach conditions the way I treat the same way I do. And that was setting a benchmark that was effectively allowing them to layer their own personality. So we looked at scripts. I basically, what I did was, if someone came in with heel pain, over the years I developed a method for treating that pain, a way of communicating it, and we all have our spiel as health professionals, and I just simply put that on paper. Then I recorded myself saying it, and then I did a video of it, and then I said to my team, right, now this is how we approach heel pain. This is the benchmark. Now you can layer your own personality over the top of that, but this is effectively how it needs to work. I then realized that I actually need a lot of time to develop this, to develop each of these, you know, management plans of the way that we treat certain conditions and kind of organize that in the clinic. So I started focusing a little bit more on time with the team rather than time with the clients. And then it hit me when it came to the birth of my first daughter. I needed to take 3 weeks off around the time. I really wanted to enjoy the birth of my first daughter. And I thought, man, how's this place going to survive without me? So over that 6 month period in the lead up to the birth of my first daughter, I put in place all of these systems to make sure that the team were well equipped to be able to run the business in my absence. And that kind of set us off. And rather than being the technician focusing on the client, I changed my focus from being the business owner. And my one role as the business owner was to look after the team.
Completely.
The team then take care of the clients. The clients then take care of business, and business takes care of me as the owner. So that closes that cycle of business. So we focus a lot on team meetings. We do daily huddles. We have weekly team meetings. We have fortnightly practitioner professional developments and admin professional development as well. We have monthly one-on-one meetings. In fact, I just had a few of them today, which is always a wonderful part of the month, being able to connect with each of my team individually. We have our quarter cuddles, which is where every 3 months we get together, we shut the books for the day and have a real good team building session. But the time and energy that I used to spend on clients, I now spend on my team. And that is the way to be able to implement systems that have heart.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely key, isn't it? And, you know, I think we're singing from the same song sheet as well, because, you know, your team become your internal customer. And as you quite rightly point out, if you're looking to scale your operations, you can't really do that without a team. So you have to invest in your team. You have to invest in, you know, giving them the best training, the best systems, the best support and resources. And ultimately, you need to be able to, you know, let them do what they do best and in some ways kind of get out of the way and let them do it.
Absolutely.
And I think that's great. And my experience getting off the tools in our practice is, the more I was there, the harder it was for me to get off the tools. In some ways, I kind of had to take myself away and kind of let people, you know, support themselves with the systems and processes we'd put in place without actually being there. Because if I was there, they'd always come back and say, oh, Jesse, what do you think about this? And so I had to get the heck out of the way. Did you find that as well in yours?
Absolutely. And I actually used golf to get away. So for a period of 6 months, once I'd come off the tools, and just on that, not every health professional really desperately wants to get off the tools. But completely. I think what every health professional wants is to have the freedom to be able to, if they wanted to. So the freedom to be able to go on holiday, or to be able to look after their family, or whatever the case may be, the freedom to have the time to be a person rather than being a slave to their business. But for me, that represented coming off the tools, and I had to get out of the business. So for 6 months, I decided I was going to really get into golf in a big way, see if I can make the major leagues. But no way I could, but I did spend a lot of time on the golf course at the time, and that then led to sort of understanding a bit more about how the business operates, and then how different business sectors work, and great time to be able to brainstorm different, you know, things as well. But more than that, it got me away from my business, which is what I needed at the time.
Yeah, and again, just to pick up one of the threads of conversation you've just left there, which I think is really valuable, is when you can create some time for yourself, it's when you have the opportunity to think. Because I'm guessing, and correct me if I'm wrong, Daniel, but when you're, you know, booked out 4 to 6 months ahead of time, seeing patients, you know, up until goodness knows what time of evening, yeah, by the time you get home, most people are probably tired and they go home, have dinner, maybe do some exercise, or if not, or, you know, spend some time with the family, watch a bit of telly and go to bed. And the opportunity to think critically about your practice when you're feeling like that is next to none. So I think getting yourself a little bit off the tools, even if, you know, like you said, quite rightly point out, there's a lot of healthcare professionals that never want to get off the tools because that's what they love. But creating that space to think is so critical.
Yeah. And I put it as create the vacuum and it will be filled. If you create the space, if you create the vacuum, it will be filled. We did this. And in my journey, it was a 12-month journey coming off the tools. And towards the end of that 12 months, I'd gone from being the 80% breadwinner to now earning 10% of the income for the business. And in that time, the business had grown 20%. So not only had I replaced my income, but the business had grown by 20%. And that was simply because I was focusing on the systems, the parts of the business that mattered. Now, I could have continued as, you know, being on the tools for that sort of one day a week, you know, earning a smaller percentage of income for the business. But the evidence to the fact that the time spent working on your business is there in that journey.
Yeah, I think that's fantastic. So I wanted to just come back to culture because that was a thread I wanted to pick up as well, because you spoke about, you know, having systems and a team and culture. And culture is something that I think, you know, I always see my responsibility as a business owner is to, you know, create great teams and immerse them in a world-class culture. And I'm curious to understand from your perspective what it is that you did to create that culture, because, you know, cultures happen whether you want to create them or not, but how do you create a great culture with a specific intent?
Yeah, actually, you just nailed it there with the specific intent. It's about our purpose. It's about working for something higher than or bigger than us. To frame that, we've got three levels, you know, of pleasure, passion, and purpose. So people will chase pleasure. That means they move from one good thing to the next and will usually make decisions based on whether it will bring them pleasure or not. You've then got the thing that you're passionate about, and this is sort of a bit more long-lasting. You know, if you've got a subject that you could just wax eloquently about it, you know, at the party or in a gathering or whatever the case may be, you've got passion, and that's really good. But again, it doesn't last as long as the purpose. And the purpose that you have is something that's bigger than you. It's something that actually the purpose itself gives you the energy to actually meet or rise to the occasion. Whereas with passion, you kind of generate that energy behind it. So what we did as a clinic was we basically decided what sort of clinic we would be. And at the time we said we wanted to be a world-class clinic. We didn't really know what that was. So we started exploring different industries and seeing what it meant to become a world-class or to deliver a world-class service. We kind of thought about questions like, what would we do if we had to charge admission to our reception area?
Ooh, good question.
Yeah, if someone was going to pay to come into the waiting room, what experience would they then expect if that was the case? You know, and try and deliver those sorts of experiences. But it's interesting, we went too far at one point. And the research, I'm big on backing what we do with research, and I haven't really talked too much on the research behind all this, but I mean, the research is saying that clients who have a great experience in the waiting room are actually more likely to get better quicker. So it's incumbent on us as health professionals to deliver a great experience. But what I mean here is if a client is expecting a 4 out of 10 service and you deliver a 6 or 7 out of 10 service, then that's going to wow them. That's going to really blow them away and it's going to be really well received. But if you deliver a 9 or a 10 service, it can actually be too much and it can turn the client off. And they go, oh no, this is all way too much. I don't know what I've stepped into here. You know, see you later.
It's a bit too flash for me, mate.
That's right, exactly. So when we talk about culture, when we talk about the service that we're delivering, it really comes down to having a real natural general understanding of who you are and the outcome of what you want to achieve here. You know, if you're looking to create great relationships with clients, then put systems around making sure that that's the result. If you're looking to really wow people, then do that. If you're looking for people to talk about you to their friends, then look at systems to do that. But understand what it is that you do and what you want, and then orientate your culture around that. Set the vision, have a purpose that drives you, communicate it with your team, get everyone on board in alignment, make sure the right people are on the bus, and then start, take action, just start doing it.
Nothing happens if nothing happens, right? So I think that's, again, crucial is, you know, taking the action on all the good information, because there's, yeah, so much you've just shared there, which is really valuable. But again, I really like what you've said. You've just got to take action. And for anyone listening, we're having a conversation today with Daniel Gibbs from Clinic Mastery, and we're going to be just diving into the experience that he's creating in his practice and certainly what he teaches. I wanted just to understand for a second, Daniel, because we've spoken about culture, we've spoken a bit about systems and team and all the rest of it, but I'm curious to understand, because for those of us who don't live in Adelaide to come and visit you, if I was to walk into your welcome room, what would be something that I would typically experience? You know, given that you said if we were going to charge an admission for this, what is that experience like?
Well, first, we don't charge admission. Okay, so what would happen? It's a quiet, unassuming, small building. It's a period-style building. And as you walk in, yes, there's the posture podiatry sign out the front. But you walk in, the first thing you'll get is a warm smile. No matter what anyone's doing, we're trained, and our policy is that anyone who walks into the building is to be warmly greeted within 20 seconds. You'll walk in, there's a nice smell. We have lemon myrtle oil, essential oil that gets diffused for various reasons that we've chosen. Lemon myrtle, one of them is the calming, soothing effects, but also it's good for molds and bacteria. and they'll come in, and it's kind of like a lounge room that's a world away from the hustle and bustle of everything outside. They'll sit there, and there'll be some ballet on the TV. There'll be, you know, some, if it's their first time with us, then you'll be presented with your paperwork to fill in, but it will have your name already there saying, you know, welcome Jesse Green, we're really glad to have you here, here's some, you know, some paperwork to fill out, you know, all that sort of stuff. But the whole sense is, you know, there's the tea, there's the up-to-date magazines, there's the fresh flowers, there's, at every point, it's just a way of showing that we actually care about the experience that they have.
I love that. It's just the little details making a big difference, isn't it? It's just executing on those things really, really well. And what I'm hearing, Daniel, and correct me if I'm wrong, because this is something that I hold dear to me, is that excellence is really not necessarily doing anything outlandish. It's about doing those little things very, very well.
I mean, yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you're going to serve a cup of water, for example, yeah, would you like a glass of water? You've got an option. You can direct them to the water cooler with some plastic cups.
Yes.
Or you can give them some chilled water in a crystal glass, or you can have some sparkling water or something like that. You know, if you've got a fridge under the reception counter, it's really easy to serve something a little bit different. So it's taking what is normal and accepted, but just taking it that little extra further to show that you actually care. And if you were to deliver that water on a tray with a cool rolled up towel and a bit of hand cream on it, you know, it's just that extra little thing that they didn't expect to go with their glass of water. That's all it is.
Yeah, there's a great saying, and I think you epitomize this, and that is that there's not a lot of traffic on the extra mile, mate. So
right.
I think you're doing that really well. Now, I've just been, you know, in preparation for today, I've been obviously, you know, going through some of the stuff that you do, and I'm curious to talk about, you know, the four systems, about going from chaos to clarity. We might have touched on some of those already, but could you just walk us through briefly what it is that takes people from chaos to clarity?
Well, actually, it's funny. I know that you're a friend of Keith Cunningham's, and one thing that he said to me was that opportunity without chaos, without structure, is chaos. And if you've got this great opportunity, if you don't have the structure in place, then it is chaos. And we kind of thought about the four steps to automating this great client experience in your business. And it started with having structure and systems in place. So if we take the acronym of STEP, STEP, we've got the structure and systems for STEP. And, you know, we've got quite complex, but it's Google Sites, it's a little intranet site, it's our communication platform. The health of any organization, regardless of whether you're a two-person organization or a 2,000-person organization, rests on the ability for communication to flow. And if you've got great platforms to be able to house your systems, to be able to house your policies, procedures, and your communication, discussion boards, those sorts of things, then that's the first thing. So we've got the structure, then we work on the team, so making sure we're getting the right people on board, having good hiring and trial processes and firing processes, and making sure we've got great culture around our team meetings that we play. It's not just about business, it's about having meaning in our work beyond all that. Then we look at E, which is the client experience. So the third thing to look at is making sure that you've got all those experiences in line, you know, that you've identified each of those points on your client's journey with you. And then finally, P for profit, which is essentially knowing how to market that and reading your numbers. You know how many health professionals out there, they're wonderful technicians, wonderful at doing their work, and perhaps for some reason they needed to open their own business. Perhaps there were no opportunities where they were, or perhaps it was just light of inspiration that they decided to open their own business, but they don't understand how to read a profit and loss statement. They don't understand how to have that relationship with their accountant. So it's important to know those things as well, because, hey, you're a business owner. You've got a new job description once you take on.
Absolutely. I think Michael Gerber calls it an entrepreneurial seizure.
Yeah, that's right.
and before you know it, they're in business. And you're right, you've got to know those numbers. It's critical, because that the numbers are a window into the business. They really give you an idea of what's happening, and you can make decisions based on your numbers. And if you can't read the numbers, well, candidly, you know, you're flying blind. Hey, Daniel, there's so much good stuff in that four-step process, and I really love the acronym. I'm an ex-military guy, so I'm a sucker for a good acronym. I love it. Before we kind of wrap up, I do want to just explore a couple little things with you. And firstly, let me say on behalf of all the listeners here, thank you for taking the time out of your day to come and hang with us. We really appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. It's my pleasure. I love this. Well, I hope you can tell. I love doing this. It's great.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. But what I really want to try and understand is, like, if we were to kind of get the I'm trying to find a better way of saying this, but for the sake of efficiency and expediency, I'm going to say the gospel according to Daniel. What would be, you know, if you were thinking, you know, about advice you'd give to people in practice at the moment, if you could kind of put it on a billboard or, you know, bullet point it, what would be a couple of things that you'd say, guys, this is where I think you really need to spend your energy and focus?
The first thing is you've got to understand that the landscape of healthcare is changing. We're no longer in a time where it's about the experience of the practitioner. It's now wholly and solely about the experience of the client. And you know that because at a barbecue, if anyone's been to the doctor and they've had a bad experience, there'll be everyone will chime in with a bad experience of their own. Healthcare is moving along a path where people respond to people who connect, to health professionals who connect with them. So the landscape is changing, and the best way to stay ahead of it is to orientate yourself around the client experience. And it starts by just, I mean, you don't have to be too Disney about this, you know what I mean? It just starts with connecting and being real. It starts with actually acknowledging someone and making sure that the problem that they've got is being validated in their mind, you know. A lot of people jump around from one health profession to the next, and perhaps you may see someone at the end of the line and they've seen 20 people. And the nature of chronic pain is such that if they have the same experience with each of those people, that is, they make a phone call, they book an appointment, they turn up, they fill in some paperwork, they go in and see the practitioner. And they've done that 20 times with 20 different practitioners before, and they have that same experience with you, then you're not really setting yourself up for success with this client. Whereas if something different happens along that line, where perhaps instead of filling the paperwork out, it's, you know, whatever the case is, they have a different experience in the waiting room or whatever it is, suddenly their mind shifts and they go, oh, I haven't experienced this before. And that is where the rub is. That's where chronic pain sufferers or people who've been through bad problems will actually have more chance of getting better quicker because of that experience that you deliver. So I know that's a really long way of trying to make things very succinct, but it is about the landscape of healthcare is changing. Orientate yourself around a great client experience and your business will benefit as a result.
Yeah, I think that's massively wise. Hey, Daniel, if people wanted to find out a bit more about what you're doing, where would be the best place for them to come and discover your stuff? Is it clinicmastery.com? Is that the best place to go?
That's right. I mean, my clinic is Posture Podiatry and we're all over the place with that, you know, in terms of social media and everything. But where everything's happening and where the excitement is with clinicmastery.com. Got a whole lot of resources on the website, a whole lot of stuff happening on our social media as well. But the point is, what we're trying to do is help health professionals to be able to automate their business with those great client experiences.
Fantastic, mate. Well, I'm sure there'll be a lot of people coming to check that out. Listen, Daniel, I wanted to say once more, thanks so much for taking the time out of your day to come and hang with us. We really appreciate your time. And it's great to see innovation in healthcare. Love it. Well done on getting the Telstra Business Award. Thoroughly well-deserved. And kudos to you, my friend. And high five. Well done.
Wonderful. Thanks, Jesse. Really appreciate the time. And yeah, thank you so much. Always good to talk about it.
Cheers, mate.
So I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Daniel Gibbs as much as I did. There's some amazing and practical information there, wasn't there? And what Daniel shared, I think, you know, most of us would probably appreciate the importance of, but I guarantee you that the most people in the health space probably don't execute as well as they might. And what Daniel's done is created a systematic way of executing on that material. And I love what he's done there. So if you want to find out a bit more about Daniel and what he does, head across to Clinic Mastery and check out his stuff there. So that's it from me for now. Until next week, have a good one. Bye for now.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist podcast. For more episodes, go to drjessegreen.com/savvydentist. And to discover how to build a high-performance dental practice, visit drjessegreen.com and download the free report.